and welcome to the Good Vibes Film Club, the audio show that's like a book club, but with films. Every week, we invite you to join our club and watch films along with us between the episodes. Not physically at the same time, because we don't have enough seats or space in our house.
It's cozy.
My name is Adam Denby, and I'm joined every week by my better half, the lovely, the enchanting, the mesmerizing,
ooh, new
Sarah
adjective.
Warner.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm okay.
Okay.
You've been watching a lot of TV this last week?
A bit, yeah. So I think I finally finished season two of The Handmaid's Tale, probably about a year after everybody else, which was a harrowing and emotionally draining experience.
Every time I come in and see you watching that, I feel upset. Like, I need to go have a shower.
Yeah.
And like a nice tuna sandwich.
It's
and a bit of Coldplay.
Something comforting.
Yeah.
It is awful. Like, really good, but... Ooh, yeah, it's awful. I think I progressed a little bit with The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel as well, which is very good, very fun.
I watched Fire this week.
What's Fire?
Oh, the Fire Festival.
Oh, was that interesting?
Yeah. I couldn't sleep after watching it. I sort of I felt shook.
Shook.
Yeah, like not in the way when you watch a horror film that you're like scared to go to sleep, but just like I feel affected.
You weren't affected.
I wasn't affected, but I felt, yeah, I felt like I was into it a lot.
Yeah, it does look interesting, that documentary. Was it really?
Yeah, it was good.
Cool.
We've also been watching The Umbrella Academy.
Yeah, have we watched three or four?
Four now, I think.
Four? Yeah, I'm really enjoying that. You were like, oh, can we watch this? And I was like, yeah, all right. I don't. It's just another kind of superhero things. I think I was quite ignorant. I thought it was like...
You just assumed it was some other, like... Iron Fist or
yeah,
like
I thought
Marvel
it was something
thing.
Like that, and it's quite different. You said it's written the comics written by Gerard Way of My Chemical Romance. And I was like, that's really cool.
Dark Horse Comics.
Yeah.
Okay, and as always, we'll be talking about each film in depth. So if you haven't seen the films or you would like to, go watch it. This is your spoiler warning. Equally, if you're not too bothered about these films but would like to be entertained for the next 60 minutes, stick around. Remember to stay tuned in for the very end of the show to find out which films we'll be covering next week. So don't let yourself fall behind. Which films are we covering this week?
Today, we are going to look at Shakespeare in Love and Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Shakespeare in Love is one of my favourite films, obviously.
Yeah. I've got a feeling that you probably didn't enjoy it.
Well, we're not here to say whether or not we didn't enjoy it. I'm here to give you... You know, critical analysis.
Ooh.
Well thought out, critical thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a perfect film. It's just a film I really like.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think, yeah, about 20 years old now, I think.
98, is it? Yeah, 98.
Yeah, I mean...
So over 20 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're recording this the night after the Oscars, 2019. I think Gwyneth Paltrow got Best Actress at 99. So yeah, the film came out in 98 and she got the Oscar in 99.
Well, I've got some trivia about that later.
Oh.
So, without any further ado...
Ado, yeah.
Let's move into the first film.
Cool.
So, Shakespeare in Love, a film that I've only ever heard you talk about.
Really?
Yeah, from 1998.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never heard of this film. Although I did realise the guy, why I know the guy so well, he's the lead character in Flash Forward.
Fast
Forward. Which, great show. If we do like a spin-off TV series, like I'd love to watch.
I know, but I know there's just one series.
Yeah, good, that's short and sweet. It's not going to go on forever. It's not
but
Grey's
does it
Anatomy.
Resolve? Does it resolve?
I don't think I've seen, I can't remember the end. Maybe I didn't finish it. So it doesn't matter, though, does it? It's a great show. Will we watch Firefly? You know, are you going to watch that, even though there's no second series?
Oh, does that not resolve?
Sometimes things are just meant to be one season. I don't think this one is. Not the point. Okay, so I'm going to jump straight into the plot, which we're now trying to just recap the synopsis with a little bit of extra, more than you see on the back of the box, but less than... Someone going through the plot in detail. So,
like the Matrix episode.
Yeah, let's not think about that. So it's a fictional romantic backstory behind the inspiration and creation of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, I think pretty much all of the film is bollocks. like made up.
I said fictional romantic backstory. Yep. That was my sentence to sum it up. Did you like that?
Yep.
Yeah. And then I think this was from someone else who said, a young Shakespeare out of ideas, short of cash, meets his ideal woman and is inspired to write one of his most famous plays.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, so he's got no money. People are like beating him up and stuff, aren't they?
No. Who beats him up?
I don't know.
They're kind of pressuring him. I don't think he gets beaten up.
I felt like he had bills to pay.
Yeah, he's like behind and you know, the owners of the theatres have got bills to pay and they're like, we need plays, and he's like, I've got writer's block, and then he starts sleeping with Gwyneth Paltrow's character and then he can like write again.
It's set in 1500 England. The 1500s in England.
Yeah.
You're looking at me weirdly.
Yeah, I'm just thinking.
Is that not correct?
I can't remember the year.
It's 1500s, doesn't really matter.
I'm trying to remember when Elizabeth died.
With William Shakespeare writing plays, but he can't get it up. There's something about that, wasn't there? I didn't make that up.
I don't know if it's explicitly that he can't get it up, or just he's not getting any.
Like I didn't get it. He's going out with that girl who he buys like the bracelet for.
Yeah.
But then he doesn't see her again. He just starts like fancying some other woman.
Well, I think,
is she like the village prostitute?
She's not the village prostitute, but she does shag about a bit.
At one point, he just walks in and she's having sex with this man, Doc Martin, and they just start chatting, having a conversation.
That's when Kit Marlowe walks in.
While she carries on.
Not Shakespeare, that's Kit Marlowe.
No, first time he's just walking on them. Yeah, he comes into the bedroom and he goes, I could have made you the world or something to the woman.
Yeah, and that's not with Doc Martin, that's with Simon Callow.
So she's with loads of men then?
Yes.
Right. So he's...
But I think she's supposed to be with Doc Martin.
Okay. But she's not. She's with loads of people.
So, I mean, I think Shakespeare's been sleeping with her.
Mm.
But I don't know. It's not getting his juices flowing. I don't know if it's literally he can't get it up. It's just that...
I think someone made a comment about that. Maybe it was a joke.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's implied.
But then there's this noble woman, this girl that loves the theatre, and she's like mouthing all the words to all the plays. And basically, Eve fancies her, but only when she's dressed as a man.
No.
Yeah.
It's not... No. He fancies her, and then he finds out that there's... So that he's doing the play, and she comes and auditions dressed as a boy.
Yeah.
And he realises... Yeah, and then he realises it's her dressed as a boy. Mm. And then he fancies her... Both ways, just because he knows it's her.
No, so they get on that boat and they go under the tunnel, and he still thinks it is a man.
Mm.
And then he kisses the man.
No.
Yes.
She kisses him, and he's like, what?
Right.
Come on, you watched this yesterday.
That looked quite mutual to me.
I think he's stunned, but he doesn't like... I think he goes kind of stiff. He doesn't pull back, but he doesn't like open his mouth and stick his tongue in.
Right.
But he's like, what? And then she gets off and the boatman's like, thanks, m'lady. And he's like, lady? And he's like, yeah, that's Viola Dorsips. Well, and then he's like, oh, it's that woman I fancy dressed as a boy.
You know when Team Rocket dress up and Ash can't tell who it is?
No.
You don't know that? You've seen Pokemon, right?
When I was like six.
Team Rocket, they always put disguises on, but it's usually just like James or Jesse with like a moustache.
Mm-hmm.
And Ash can never tell who it is.
I know, it's silly, because it just looks like Gwyneth Paltrow in a short wig.
And also, the guard knew who it was.
Yeah, that's why it's funny. It's funny. It's a comedy.
Is it a comedy? I wasn't sure.
I was
writing romantic comedy, I wasn't quite sure, because there are a few bits here and there.
It's not, yeah, it's not like, you know... really funny, but it's got its moments.
And then basically throughout the film, actors drop out or die or whatever and end up playing like Romeo and Juliet, played by Shakespeare and this woman.
Nobody dies.
Yeah, he gets stabbed.
He's not in the play!
Who?
Kit Marlowe.
Right.
He's another playwright. He's not in the play. He's nothing to do with the play.
So, okay, no one dies, but people for some reason can't make it.
Yeah, like, Gwyneth Paltrow is supposed to be Romeo, but they find out, because it's illegal to have women acting, so they find out that he is a she, and they're like, off you go. And then Shakespeare's going to play Romeo, and then Juliet's voice breaks.
Yeah.
And then Gwyneth Paltrow ends up stepping in and playing Juliet.
Okay. And then what happens? Because you came home and I missed the end of the film. What was the last bit?
she goes off.
Spoiler warning. Anyone
she goes
wants
off
to watch
with
it.
Her husband, Lord Wessex, to
yeah,
America.
That's what I thought happened.
Yeah, it's like a sad ending.
Like Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, except nobody dies.
Except that guy who got stabbed.
Yeah, but he's not.
Yeah, I thought. Okay, so that's the end of the plot. It's doing quite well.
You got a lot of it wrong, but we got there.
Well, people, if they want to watch the actual film and see the actual facts, they can go there. This is for entertainment, okay? Don't give me that look. Okay, so I've got some thoughts. I think thoughts being, like, positive things.
Okay.
So, it's lighthearted, and it's fun.
Yep.
And it has the cheesiest music I've ever heard.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it was the 90s, so maybe that's just what music sounded like.
It's a little cheesy. I don't think it's that bad.
It celebrates theatre a lot. There's like a lot of people passionate about theatre and poetry and romance. Mm-hmm. I think that's nice if you're into that kind of stuff. William Shakespeare thinks he might be gay and is in love with a boy that turns out to be a woman. No?
No.
Does that not happen?
No.
Okay, we got over that one.
He doesn't fancy her when she's a boy.
He fooled me.
Kisses him, and then he's like, oh, it's a woman. And then he fancies her when she's dressed as a boy, just because he knows it's her.
But I thought she was running away. Why would she kiss him?
Because she fancies him. She just gets overcome and wants to snog him.
She shouldn't run away then, should she?
She knows it's doomed. She knows they can't be together.
Hmm. Okay, I see your point.
My point, it's just what happens in the film.
There's kind of passion in the middle bit, like the passion for each other is only rivaled by their passion for like theatre and poetry. Mm. They're like leaning over each other, rubbing against each other, like writing "Roses Are Red" and things in their sheets. You know that TV thing where they pull their sheets up like over their chests and stuff.
Yeah.
The Queen looks like Darth Vader when he takes off his helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think, because Elizabeth I, I think she lost her hair and wore wigs all the time, so she's always portrayed having, like, kind of a massive forehead. And then she wore a lot of this, like, powder.
And her sort of henchmen have same hairstyle as well, don't they?
Oh, did they?
Yeah, she's got, like, two, like, Tweedledee and Tweedledum next to her that walk aside. And I notice they've got all their hair pulled back, like, into an orange sort of bob. Mm-hmm. But almost where you can't see the...
It's just how she likes
the hairline kind of thing. Yeah. And had this been a true story, it would be really interesting.
I mean, bits of it could be true. I think Viola De Lesseps might have been a real person.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, actually. She might be.
That's all my thoughts I've got on the film.
Oh, dear.
I tried to keep problems minimal as well. But I'm going to dive into the problems. So I put Shakespeare's very fickle.
He
seems to sort of take any old advice from anyone in the film.
Well, no, he's very... Yeah, no, he is very fickle because he's just like... He's got a wife and then he's in London doing his plays and he shags this person, starts this play, makes a promise to this person, then changes his mind and, yeah, no, he's a very fickle character.
Guy was like, oh, what's your script about? And then he starts saying, no, it's not a pirate, it's this. And Shakespeare's like, oh, yeah, all right. Just take in, like... It's just... You know, sways about a bit with his mind and things.
Yeah. I don't think you'd say that's a problem. That's just a comment on his character. I don't think that's a problem. I think he's supposed to be like that. Like, he's not a perfect character.
My biggest problem with these types of films, like period films, and I mentioned it when we saw Les Mis, is that they always have modern hairstyles that are just too modern. They just give it away that this isn't...
What, is everyone rocking, like, the Elizabeth I look? These days.
What do you mean?
Like people walking around with like massive foreheads and ginger wigs.
Well, this is my point actually, is that it seems even more out of place. If everybody looked like Elizabeth I, I'd go, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like they're not getting, you know, their vitamin C every day.
So whose haircut is too modern?
Well, the main guy for a start.
He's short hair.
It's like spiked up and
no,
it's got
it's
like
not.
Yes it has. His beard looks like it's cut with like an electric razor. He
is a well-groomed
man.
Yeah.
There's no way in hell that it's not like he's having a shower, popping in some shampoo.
I always think, because they're like shagging all the time, you never see him like wash, and he's always wearing the same jacket. And I watch it and I'm like, he's very handsome, but I bet he smells a bit.
I don't think he would look, he would never get that. He looks like he moisturises.
Well, he does. He's Joseph Fiennes.
Yeah, but Elizabeth,
people are doing his makeup.
Elizabeth I doesn't moisturise, does she? Hair's all falling out. So you've got like this accurate portrayal of what people would look like against this, oh, well, we'll just make him look like that so people, you know, actually want to be romantically involved.
So your criticism is Joseph Fiennes is too sexy?
I don't think that, no, I'm blaming the set dressing and the costumes. It's, you know, it should do a better job to make it a bit more accurate.
How do you know what's accurate?
Well, let's not, well, because they're putting people like Elizabeth I in, saying this is what people look like because the hair fell out.
No, not people. She was the queen.
Yeah.
That's what the queen looked like. Not everybody looked like that.
Yeah, because she was like the only person who had her portrait done. So that's, we only know what she looked like. She probably looked the best out of all of them, in which case everyone else should look even worse. But they don't. They've all got like trimmed beards and moisturisers.
We have pictures of William Shakespeare. We know what he looked like.
Yeah, we didn't. And again, that's a portrait. Someone's just drawn the most ideal version of him.
Okay, so you just think he's too sexy?
No, not him. Just, you know, generally in these types of films, people look a bit too shiny, a bit too polished, and it breaks away from that immersion a little bit. You know, your brain thinks, like, knows they could be in like Vogue magazine.
But he has got the gross jacket and the silly trousers on. That that immerses me a bit.
Okay.
From the neck down, I'm like, ooh.
I know she's rich, but where does she get perfectly fake facial hair from and a wig? I can't even find them that good on Amazon.
Yeah, I did think, why would they be selling boys' wigs in Tudor England? For plays? She got it from some kind of costume place?
Yeah, but how? I mean, they barely had a market for, like, selling apples.
Yeah, this occurred to me last night. I was like, where did they get that wig and that little moustache? And, you know, now you buy fake moustaches, and they're peeling off after, like, a minute. But hers, like, the nurse, when she accidentally leaves it on, the nurse comes in and, like, takes it off her face like it's a wax strip, and it's like, shh. But, like, you got a fake moustache now, that thing will be peeling off in, like, a bit of sweat, that thing will be peeling off in 2 minutes.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. But if you didn't have that, the film wouldn't work. If she didn't have the moustache, she'd probably just look a bit too delicate.
Yeah, it just mean they could have got, I don't know, what would you use? You'd use, like, a horse's mane or something.
Yeah, but then it wouldn't look real.
And then it wouldn't be believable.
People wouldn't fall for it.
I know.
Because everyone's shocked when it's revealed she's a woman. Everyone's like, what?
And then I got the final part of this film. I have too many problems to go into, so I don't even know if it's worth talking about.
Why? The whole, like, play bit?
Yeah.
It's my favourite bit.
I know.
And I don't really like Romeo and Juliet.
Neither do I.
It's too depressing.
I just thought, as a play, it's not that good.
Yeah, but it's his big one. It's the famous one. And they are doomed lovers. Do you know my main problem with this film?
Go on.
Ben Affleck.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
he's not in it that much, to be fair.
Yeah, just his English accent. There's so many, like, you've got, as Kit Marlowe, you've got Rupert Everett, like, very fine British actor. There are lots of fine British actors, and there's a lot of actors that can do a very good British accent. Ben Affleck is not one of them. There's just bits where he says stuff, and I'm like, I don't know what he's saying.
Have you got anything else to say about the film? Any problems or thoughts? No? Good. We can move on.
I like that whole play bit.
Okay, why did you like that play bit?
Because I think it's interesting. Like I say, we weren't there. I don't know how accurate it is, but I think it's cool to see a play traditionally in that kind of theatre, how it would have been done. And you see all the common people come in and the rich people are up the back and they get a cushion, but everyone else is just stood. Can you imagine standing through like a 2 or 3 hour play, just standing through it? That's what people did, and they're all so immersed. So
they didn't have a lot else going on.
Sorry?
They didn't have a lot else going on.
Yeah, like, it would have been exciting. That would have been like a great form of entertainment. So, like I say, I'm not a historian. I don't know exactly how authentic that thing is, but I think it's interesting to see how that would have played out with the play.
And then moving on to themes. I like the theme of finding inspiration to make art is something that I can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's not, it doesn't just come out of thin air. People think, you know, being creative is quite easy, and yeah, he's having a tough time, Shakespeare, and he goes through this like journey to find that inspiration. And okay, maybe that story isn't perfect, but I like that theme.
Okay.
Forbidden love relationships in more ways than one, because he wouldn't be seen kissing another man. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, in the context of rehearsing for the play, they have like a big snog in front of everyone.
There's a lot. I didn't actually list it here, but it's a big thing about women not being able to act and stuff. Which is that even? But that my point was about it being true. It would have been nice if we were watching a film about the first time that a woman was allowed to be on stage and the story of how that happened.
I don't know. Well, there might be a film about that. I don't know when that was.
But that would be interesting. This just wasn't it, but they sort of wedged that in.
Well, I don't think this happened.
No, but there is. I mean, when I was reading up about it, it said like, oh, the first woman actor was this date or whatever. And that would have been an interesting story.
Maybe someone will do a film about that.
Maybe. Copyright. arranged marriage is a theme. It always tends to be in these types of films. There's always some arranged marriage where someone wants to or doesn't want to.
Yeah, she can't. Like at this point, I guess later in his life, Shakespeare's quite... Well, no, she can't marry him actually because he's already married.
Yeah.
I was going to say maybe later on in his life when he was like rich and successful, it would maybe be an okay match, but he's got a wife, so that doesn't work.
I've got Love at First Sight as well. The whole, a lot of the portion of the film is about, like, they don't really know each other. He just sees her in a hall and he decides he's in love with her.
Yeah, well, I mean, he gets to know her, but it is just initially it's like, oh my God, she's fit. I want a bit of that. Whereas I think she thinks he's handsome, but she more falls in love with him because she sees the plays and she loves the plays. So she's kind of in love with his creativity. And I think when she has to go to America with her husband, she doesn't want him to stop writing because that's sort of the thing she loves most about him is his creativity. Cause I think he's sort of a bit sad about it.
Well, then
make
him a bit scruffy. And a bit dirty. Like, okay,
I think he does look dirty. That blue jacket makes me sad.
No one's looking at his jacket.
I am, and I'm like, that thing's dirty, and you've been wearing it this whole time.
Well, yeah,
his shirt's all off-white and
grubby.
He's
in the 16th century. That's not his fault.
I know. I'm just saying he looks like he'd smell.
I'm saying for the core purpose of this film, if it is her falling in love with his playwriting ability, then he doesn't need to be some attractive male model, does he?
No, but I think that's what initially attracts her to him, but later she is like, oh, he is handsome. Like, she finds him attractive as well, physically.
Hmm. Weird she only has that attraction when she sees him, though, isn't it? She didn't go, oh, he's been writing all these plays, I better find out who it is.
So. Well, I think maybe she really likes him, and if it had been someone she didn't find attractive, maybe she would have just, like, really admired him and want to be his friend. But bonus, he's hot, so shag him.
And they've got same-sex relationships as a theme.
No.
Because I find it really weird that how illegal it would have been to have a same-sex relationship, yet all of the actors who are men have to dress up as women, and they have to do these scenes where they kiss each other and stuff. And that happens in the film where the men are kissing each other and no one bats an eyelid. Yeah. It's like highly illegal.
Because it's like acting out. It's weird how... Well, not weird, because it should all be okay, but yeah, in that time, a woman on the stage was awful, but a man dressed as a woman kissing another man, that was fine.
Yeah, two men kissing would have been illegal back then, right?
Yeah, but they're like, in that kind, and probably cross-dressing, I don't know, illegal, but probably thought of as odd in that time. But yeah, a woman acting, like a woman working in that profession...
It got me thinking about how in like ancient Greece and things, like having a man having sex with a man was like a better thing to do. Like they were seen, because they were seen as like the superior race, people...
Was it?
Yeah. People like Nero and things would just have like men all day long, because that was like, they were like the upper class citizen kind of thing. And then it comes back round where then suddenly it's like forbidden. And now... just weird how it goes up and down, isn't it? Maybe in a thousand years' time, we'll just...
Well, hopefully not. Hopefully everyone can just do what they like now.
Yeah, well, you'd hope so. I mean, I don't know what happened with ancient Greece. I think we didn't carry on. There were wars and people died and things changed. Hopefully that won't happen.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Because they wanted, you needed to make more babies.
Okay, so trivia. I've got, I'm going to read these out because they're straight from IMDb. Although long portions of Romeo and Juliet are used in this film, along with famous lines from many of Shakespeare's play, William Shakespeare is not credited in the film.
Oh, as a writer?
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I guess he's not going to, like, sue.
No, no. I picked that one just because... I just found it funny.
Yeah. Surely someone could sue.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's stuff about music when it becomes over like 90 years old, it can be used. That's why you always hear a lot of like those classic songs used in games and films and stuff, because they don't have to pay any royalties. Mm. Number two, Ben Affleck took a part in the film to be near then-girlfriend Gwyneth Paltrow.
Ah.
So you always moaning about him. He's only there because he just wanted to be around her. So that's why
I don't remember them going out.
Well, it says then girlfriend. Maybe it was, I don't know. Maybe it was brief.
I thought at that point, was it before that she went out with Brad Pitt?
I don't know. No one knows. Well, number three, counting this film's win for Best Picture.
It has the most
Oscars ever won, in brackets 7, without winning Best Director Award.
Hmm.
So I was really shocked because I didn't think this was an Oscar-winning film. I don't know what the context back then. Well, I didn't. You know, there are a lot of films you watch from the 90s that you hadn't seen, but you just know or you have a feeling that they are famous in some way for winning some kind of award type thing. I never would have picked this film. Just because maybe that's just me never seeing it or having heard of it or being 8 years old at the time.
I think the Academy does like historical things, maybe. Like period pieces.
Oh, really?
Maybe. Oh, I don't know.
They could have... Oh,
I know Gwyneth Paltrow won. I know Judi Dench got Best Supporting Actress for something. I don't know if it's still the record, but I think maybe at the time it was the record for award, getting the Oscar, but for like... so little screen time because she's in like 3 scenes.
Yeah.
She's really not in it a lot.
How does she even win an award for that then?
I don't know what the criteria is. Mm. Well, like Olivia Colman won Best Actress last night for The Favourite, and although brilliant, you could argue she's not actually the lead actress in that film.
You basically just got to be an English queen and you'll win an Oscar. Is that what you're saying?
Well, oddly enough, I think Shakespeare in Love, that was the same year as the Elizabeth film with Kate Blanchett.
Right.
And I think Kate Blanchett was nominated for playing Elizabeth I for Best Actress, but Gwyneth Paltrow got it. And I don't know. I like both films. I haven't watched Elizabeth for years because Kate Blanchett's brilliant in that.
Are you ready for a conclusion?
Okay.
This is my own writing here now.
Your own thoughts.
Great as a piece of fan fiction. Not so much an actual film. Predictable and not very convincing.
Oh.
Quite an original idea for a romantic comedy of its time.
Okay.
Does that seem fair to someone who's not you?
Yeah, I just think this sort of film's not really your cup of tea.
It's weird because it's really predictable in that you kind of know exactly what's going to happen and where it's going to go. And I think then you have to kind of be invested in the relationship or at least convinced in some way that like these people are real, they're real people. For me, I couldn't get behind it, that's all.
Yeah, I think when I was younger, I did believe it and I got really sad. But now as I watch it more, like, you say William Shakespeare's pretty sort of flaky and kind of he just goes from one thing to another. So I'm kind of not as convinced.
Mm-hmm.
Especially initially, like he just really, really fancies her physically.
Did you basically just fancy him when you were younger? Is that what you're trying to say?
Oh, I definitely fancied him in this film.
Well, you can't just go around liking films just because you fancy someone in.
But I do like it as well. And they did, they made it into a play that was on in London for a while. I went and saw it. It was really good.
Oh, right.
And the guy that played Shakespeare in it there, he was also very attractive.
So it's like a meta play because you're watching a theatre production of someone doing a theatre production. Is that right?
Yeah, like a play in a play. Well, wow. Only a bit of it. Well, like there's a musical called Kiss Me, Kate. That is a musical version of The Taming of the Shrew,
mm-hmm.
which is another Shakespeare play. And in that musical, they are putting on The Taming of the Shrew. So you've got The Taming of the Shrew within a musical based on Taming of the Shrew.
Maybe you should have a spin-off theatre podcast.
I probably don't go enough.
Okay, you ready to move on?
That
is all of Shakespeare in Love. On to the next film.
Cool. Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Mm-hmm.
Let's chat about it. I have not written any plot notes, so this is coming out of my brain.
Is that because you've seen it so many times, you know, off by heart?
I'm hoping I can summarise it articulately.
If not, maybe I can do it. But you can have a go.
Yeah.
Go on.
So, in this film, we meet Scott, a 22-year-old or 23-year-old male.
22,
thank you. Oh my god, sorry, I've got...
The pop shield just fallen.
There's probably a pop shield and I keep knocking it with my chest so that it's falling. Like,
continue.
Keeps colliding with
be
my
be a professional and
boobs.
Carry on.
Oh my god, it won't stop moving.
All right, go.
Ah! 22-year-old male in Toronto, and essentially you just see him, he's in a band, he plays bass in a band with his friends, and that's fun. And he's going out with a high school student called Knives,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine.
Well, hang on, before you go scene by scene, what's the film about? If you were to read the back of the box.
It's about a guy who meets the girl of his dreams, but he has to defeat her 7 evil exes in order to date her.
That's a better synopsis, yeah.
Okay. So he's going out with Knives, but then he has a dream about this girl, and he meets her at a party, and she's called Ramona Flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And they start dating, and then he kind of dumps Knives quite harshly. Goes out with Ramona, and then as it goes on, these guys sort of keep appearing, and they're from this League of Evil Exes. League of Evil Exes.
Yeah.
And he has to defeat them all in order to date her.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Well, that's kind of a plot synopsis.
Cool.
So, yeah.
I have anything to say about this film.
That's just the plot. I have things to say.
Okay. Or you could do, like, maybe favourite scenes or something.
Oh.
What's your favourite scene?
I don't know. There's a lot of it. I forgot how funny it is. I laughed.
Yeah, you did laugh quite a bit.
I laughed a lot. I haven't watched it for a few years. What did I laugh at? It's just, like, all the little stylistic things. Like, there's a bit where Knives comes round and she's looking for Scott and his housemate answers. And she's like, is Scott in? And he's like, no, he just went out. And just behind him, he just like jumps out of a window and it smashes. And she's like, oh. And then you see him like running behind her and she like looks. It's just sort of just silly the way it's put together. Like just all the editing. And it is literally just like a comic.
Yeah.
Like a comic as a live action film. It's got like, I don't know the technical word for like the words.
The words.
Like bang.
You mean like onomatopoeias? Well, have a word that sounds like it spelled.
But obviously, if you read a comic, they have it there because you can't hear anything. But obviously, in a film, you would hear the bang, but it'll, like, say it as well. Like, it'll write it on the screen.
I thought you were talking more about when, for example, when they're walking at the beginning and they're having their conversation, but every time the camera cuts, so, like, in a different location.
That too. I just really like the way it's all edited and the bits when people talk about... Like, there'll be a shot of, like, a close-up of Scott, and then it'll go to, like, Knives, and she's like, oh, your hair's shaggy, and then it just cuts back to him, and he's just got a hat on.
Yeah.
And you know, like, realistically, you wouldn't have been able to put a hat on in that time. It's just very, like,
well, it's like your eyes have moved to the next panel of the comic.
Yeah.
Which is what, when if you read the first comic, like, the first, I don't know, half an hour are shot scene by scene from the panels of the comic. Like, it is identical. The dialogue's identical. Even the visuals of like what the interior of the room looks like, the hair, everything, the angle. But then I think it would confuse a lot of people in the way, you know, they're talking about band stuff, like a gig at the Rocket. And every time it cuts, they're like, they're walking in a different location. So it seems quite inconsistent because every time, like after two people finish talking, suddenly you're in a different location, but it's the same conversation. Which is a bit hard to follow, but actually, if you were to look at the comic, the panels in that order, it would be speech bubble, next scene, speech bubble, and behind them would be different, you know, wherever they've moved kind of thing. That makes sense?
Yeah.
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 Continue.
Yeah, I love all the fight scenes. I think they're all really good. And just some of the characters that I think, oh my God, this pop shield. I'm sorry about that. I keep knocking it. A lot of the cast, I think this film is what, like 10 years old now? It's 2009? Yeah. So there's a lot of the cast, I think they're already well known, but now that, like Chris Evans, obviously he's like, he plays the second evil ex, Lucas Lee. And Chris Evans is obviously now massive, like he's Captain America. And also Brie Larson, who plays Envy Adams, she's gone on to win like a Best Actress Oscar. She's about to be, you know, come out in Captain Marvel.
A lot of Marvel people in this film, aren't there?
Who else? There's those two. Anyone else?
Don't know.
Is it Anna Kendrick, Aubrey? Is it Aubrey Plaza?
Yeah.
It's a lot of like a lot of big stars. I think they were big then, but
they're bigger now.
They're bigger now.
What about the guy who played Superman?
Oh yeah, the guy who played Superman.
Like, what's happened to him?
I don't know. Because this was after Superman.
Yeah.
Brandon Routh.
So a lot of superhero.
A lot of superhero. Actors. Yeah.
Weird that he on the documentary and extras, he's the only one who doesn't have any like time with the camera. I don't know if he's just quite like, I get in, I do my acting gig, and then I'm out. Everyone else
time
kind
with
of
the camera. Or do you mean the crew, the cast?
Or both.
You said time with the camera.
Yeah, with the camera that's like talking to people and asking them questions and filming them.
Oh. Oh, like the behind-the-scenes stuff?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I said on the extras and the behind-the-scenes.
Okay.
Yeah, so well, I don't know what happened to him, because he was a big star at the time. Like, he'd just done Superman, and he was the new Superman, and then he'd just gone, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't know what he's up to now.
Yeah.
To look that up. Got some of my thoughts?
Yeah, go straight in.
So, obviously, there's a lot of gaming references, like the opening itself, the Universal logo.
Mm-hmm.
Is all done sort of 8-bit animation, 8-bit music, which I think was designed by... I think it was designed by Edgar Wright's brother.
Right.
The director's brother. And I think they were planning to do more with it, I think I read, but it got, in sort of early screenings, it got such a good reaction, they just left it how it was.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a nice touch, and you have... You know, young Neil's always playing like Zelda games. There's sort of little bits of Zelda music. I think Edgar Wright like wrote to Nintendo and was like, please, can I use it? And stuff like that. So I think it's got all those little things.
It's really weird because I don't like any of his other films. Although I'm starting to think maybe that's... I just don't like the ones that Simon Pegg is involved with.
Baby Driver's Edgar Wright, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it was well directed. I don't know about the story, just didn't satisfy me that. Well, maybe we'll do that another time. But yeah.
Sure.
Some great radio.
Some of my thoughts, maybe negative, but around the character, but it's thoughts, not as in the film's bad, but just thoughts around the characters. So, Scott. I've written in my notes, Scott is a... Well, I won't say.
You said this to me when we were watching.
Yeah,
you don't
just...
like Scott.
He's just a bit annoying, isn't he? Like, he's funny. Like, I think if he was my friend, I don't know. I find him annoying. Just stuff like him and Knives go to the arcade and they're playing the games and she's like, do you want another one? And he basically just, like, nods for her to put the money in. And I'm like, she's in school. She's got, like, no money. And like, what does Scott do? Does he have a job?
No, he doesn't have a job.
Okay, but it's still, I guess then, maybe she does have... more money. Maybe she gets pocket money and he has nothing.
No, but that's kind of the point, isn't it? It's like he is just using her as a rebound. Like he's had a really horrible relationship and he's just looking for something really easy. And easy doesn't just mean less complicated. It means easy that she, you know, she's paying for stuff and he's taking advantage of her.
He is. That's not nice because she gets a bit like into him and the whole band stuff. She gets like quite overexcited, but she's like a sweet girl and she's smart and she can do better.
Yeah. Which, you know, they keep her character in that way and she learns a lot along the way as well.
True. Like, she definitely, her character develops, I think, in a really cool way. And I like how it kind of comes up, you know, she gets really, when she realises that, you know, that he's like moved on and he's with Ramona, she sort of gets sort of plotting in like a jealousy way, trying to make him jealous, and she dyes her hair. And then she gets really angry at Ramona because she thinks she stole him and then broke his heart and she's angry. But then it all kind of comes up Scott kind of sets it right, and then they work together because they're actually a good team and they get on well. They're just not...
They're not the two that were meant to be.
No. Well, I'm not sure Scott and Ramona are, to be honest. But
really?
No.
Why?
This is a whole weird dynamic. Because he puts her on a pedestal. And, you know, he has this dream about her. And it's like, my dream woman. And what else did I put in my notes? And he just idolises her and just assumes that she's into all this, like, really cool stuff. And he's not cool enough. But she's all right.
Mm.
Like, she's quite cool, but he's like, surprised when she turns up on time for things. Like, he just assumes she's going to be, like, too cool and just, like, breezing in, like, late. And she's like, no, I'm not a dick. I've, like, come on time. Just makes these kind of assumptions that she's too cool for school and kind of, like, just above his league.
Everybody does. They say, like, that whole, compilation, is it? Where they're cutting short and the guy's like, she's on another level, dude.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. Is it? I forgot her name. Not Stacey. The woman who's like, Scott, stop trying to scare off the coolest girl at my party.
Julie.
Yeah, Julie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody does. They build up this picture of her, don't they?
Yeah.
And then that's kind of the point, is that she's not really like that. But sometimes the image of people is very different to how they actually are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it then kind of annoys me that. He idolizes her in that sense, but then he sort of gets annoyed that she's got a past and she's got baggage. And I don't know, like, you can't get into a relationship with someone and kind of expect them to have not gone through anything. So I know she's got a lot of baggage and her situation is quite unique, I guess. Well, there's this league of evil exes. Yeah, but I think she kind of accepts that and she like talks to him about it.
Yeah.
But then he's always just dead funny with her and he just expects her to have like never been with anyone before. And you can't, meet someone and just expect them to have no baggage, to expect them to have no history, no exes.
That's true, but you just fight them all.
Yeah, but he's a bit begrudging about it, which I kind of get. It's a weird concept, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought you would have brought this up a bit sooner, to be honest.
But what?
The concept.
Yeah. It is a weird concept. Well, I think one of my... Well, I'll get onto that as like one of my criticism. Something I like, but maybe it would confuse other people, is kind of you've got this sort of... Not supernatural stuff, but stuff that isn't real. Like the fight scenes and like another bit with the first evil ex, Matthew Patel. And he starts basically levitating and like summons these... what are they?
Demon hipster chicks.
And they've got all like magic powers and everyone's punching and they're flying through the air. Like it's not real. Like if it were a real fight, it wouldn't be like this.
Yeah.
And some people are just kind of watching it and they accept it. But I know Scott's sister is like, what? What is going on? When Matthew Patel starts levitating, she's like, what the hell is happening? So it's kind of this contrast between people just like, oh, there's this big weird fight happening. And people are like, wait, what? So you're kind of not sure if it's totally bananas or not.
I'm not sure if she's more exclaiming at, like, why is this person fighting you? Like, why do you want to fight them?
Okay.
Kind of thing.
Maybe.
So I remember trying to explain this film to someone. Like if you haven't seen this film, it's really difficult to express what happens or what the idea is behind it and the kind of feel. Would you agree?
Yeah.
I remember telling my dad about it and saying, like, oh, it's one of my favourite films.
Mm.
And he was like, oh, tell me about it. And I was like, well, there's this guy. And he has to fight these seven evil ex-girlfriends.
Boyfriends. Like, exes.
Exes. What did I say?
Girlfriends.
And it's like, okay, so he's got powers, has he? And I was like, no,
yeah.
he just sort of does. And my dad was like, what do you mean he just sort of does? Like, so how did he get his power? What powers does he have? And I was like, and I just was lost for words and I just didn't know how to explain it.
No.
And I said to you one time, I'd read something about it. It's kind of like in the way that in musicals when the cast burst into songs and then the moment it ends, no one ever addresses it or talks about the fact that happened.
A bit of sort of trivia I read is that they basically set this out basically like it's a musical, but instead of songs, you have fight scenes.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the point. So yeah, like you say, in a musical, you have a song, and obviously, if that happened, like in our world, we'd be like, but it's just, but in a musical, it's just normal, and then everyone just gets on doing their shopping or whatever.
I think it's weird because in actual comic book, you know, when you're reading like manga and other types of sort of quirky comics, is it's not something you ever stop to think about because it's just sort of expected. You expect little cartoon guys to be jumping up and punching someone else, and you don't think, okay, hang on, I need to wait a second. Is this in our real world, or is this some fictional thing?
Yeah.
You never do that in a comic because you're already in a comic.
Mm-hmm.
But here, obviously, it's really difficult to do because you're watching real life people on a real life set with like real world events.
Yeah, so I think that's one of my notes for problems is if you kind of didn't understand, if you weren't familiar with the concept, maybe with the comics, would this film just confuse you? Because it's true, like you say, you're trying to explain it to your dad. It's like, do they have superpowers? Do they not? Because everyone kind of does, but also they kind of don't.
Well, I think that my opinion is that if you think things have to be that black and white, then this film isn't for you.
Yeah, I think maybe once, because I think the first time I watched it, or first couple of times, I was like, why is there this league, and why is she like aware of it? Because I guess she'd only recently broken up with Gideon and moved to Toronto.
Mm.
So how does she like know about this league? Why is she just like accepting? I don't have many ex-boyfriends, but if they just like formed a gang and like came to like annoy me, I wouldn't be happy about that. I wouldn't just be like, well, yeah, they're my seven evil exes. Well, there wouldn't be seven.
Well, the thing is, he, like the first one says, didn't you get my email explaining the situation? I kind of feel that everybody who is involved in these fights, including Ramona, have been informed in the chain email.
Yeah, but why is she not like, guys, can you not? Can you get over it?
Because
like Matthew Patel, literally, what was it, like 2 days in like primary school?
Yeah.
Why is he so bothered that she can't have a boyfriend?
Probably not, but like Gideon's probably paying him off. He's organised.
Well, he's clearly, yeah, well, I guess he's evil. He's an evil ex.
He's
clearly
evil,
not a nice person.
And he's rich. Right? He's like independent records producer of the year. He's got all the money.
Because if someone came to me and said, I'll give you like £10 million to just go harass your new girlfriend of someone you dated when you were 15, I'd be like, a bit harsh.
You wouldn't take £1 million?
£10 million. Well, I'm not going to have to fight anybody anyway.
Wouldn't harass them, fight them. It's almost like
I don't want to fight them.
It's like, I think of it as like a Dragon Ball like knockout,
I guess,
tournament.
I don't want to fight them. I don't care. I'm glad they're happy. That's fine.
Well, you might not be, and the exes might not be.
I suppose.
You don't have an ex that you think of in that way.
I don't think so. I don't think anyone thinks of me that way. Hopefully.
Continue.
So, yeah, that's one of my problems. I think just the overall concept, it's hard to explain. You kind of just have to watch it and accept it.
Yeah, I remember watching it with your family. I didn't think that they would even...
You did watch it with my mum and dad?
Yeah, your brother at the end, it was like, oh, that's really good. I was like, oh, I didn't expect that.
I think with the visual, yeah, like, I think if you just explain it, it's weird. But watching it, I think, yeah, you kind of just accept it.
Yeah. And it's tricky because a lot of the references and work that's gone into it, like you say with the Nintendo music, they'll just be lost on a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely.
I remember your mum at the end of it, she said, you know when Knives turns into like an emoji?
Yeah.
She was like, so what's that from? Is it from something?
Yeah.
And I was like, it's an emoji.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the letter H from? You know, that kind
of. Yeah. So there's some references some people will get and others
cultural,
they won't.
Younger references or
yeah.
Just if you're into the geekier kind of things.
Yeah, sure. What else did I have as a problem?
I don't know. People at home don't know either.
Yeah, just things like, I get that's a comic, but then there's just bits where they're like, oh, it's cold. And they're like, well, let's go inside. And there's just a door in the street and then it leads to Ramona's house. Or what's that about?
So she says about those subspace highways that she uses to get around.
Oh.
That's how she does it. But when she uses them, she passes through like people's thoughts and dreams. That's why Scott sees her.
Oh. Okay, I understand that now. That's cool. Okay.
Sort of like Nether portals in Minecraft.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of explains it in the film, but I don't think it. I,
Well,
I completely understand that
it's gone over my head. Yeah. I might have just been a bit stupid.
Well, because when she says that, you don't really know whether it's a joke or not.
Yeah.
She's like, because he's like, are you from my dreams? Am I dreaming kind of thing? And she does explain it, but you don't expect her to say that.
Yeah.
So it's funny. But then actually when it comes up later in the film, and obviously there's the one at the very end of the film, they go through the door as well.
Mm.
So those doors are, I only know these things because I played the game and read the comics all this stuff. So.
Yeah. And there's a bit at the end where she kind of goes back to Gideon and she says she can't help herself. And then when Scott dies, he's then in like this sort of desert and then she's there. I don't really get how she's there talking to him when he's like dead. And then she says the whole thing like, oh no, he literally has a way of getting into my head. And there's like a chip on the back of her neck because he's like controlling her. And then he goes back to life. So yeah, I don't really get why she's there in like the dead place. And she managed to communicate that she's being mind controlled. And then they kind of just gloss over that she's just got, and then later on she kind of just like, she just kind of like take it out. Does it get bashed?
Yeah, it's bashed, yeah. Doesn't Scott then, bash it?
Yeah.
I fell
and
asleep.
They kind of just...
that bit, sorry.
And they kind of just gloss over the fact that he was like, he put a chip in her. I was like, this is weird.
What, but the rest of the film's fine?
Yeah, I don't know, I just felt a bit out of place.
Well, I get, you'll probably bring it up in the trivia, but I guess it's just because the rest of the comics hadn't been written at that point.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think I read they finished the screenplay or the script or whatever when the first book was done.
Yeah.
First comic.
So I don't know whether it maybe might not quite fit with the feeling of the first 75% of the film.
Okay.
Might be slightly different.
Okay.
You sort of write yourself into a corner sometimes when you've got everything else so solid and then you need a way of ending it.
Yeah, because why would she go back to Gideon unless he put a chip in her? Because she wouldn't.
No.
But then, if she didn't, there'd maybe not be as much of a reason for a final conflict. And, you know, I like things like the fact when Scott first faces Gideon, he does it for her. And then the next time he's like, nah, this is for me, just because you're a dick. That's fun. Or is it the power of self...
Respect.
Respect, yeah.
See, you say about Scott being a horrible...
He does get better.
Well, that's the thing. It wouldn't be a redemption story if he was just great from the get-go.
Yeah. And Knives gets... She's cool. I like Knives.
Yeah.
You feel really bad for her. Because, yeah, Scott cheats on her and Ramona. And she's all innocent. And she loved him. And she gets clingy and excited. But then she's like a badass as well. And another note I've just written is that Ramona only helps to fight when it's against a girl. I know she helps with Gideon later. But why was it that when she was like, I'm getting my massive hammer out of my bag? Why didn't she help with any of the others? Or is it just so we could have a girl-on-girl fight, because that would be fun?
I don't have an answer for that one. I think maybe because some of it's a bit like, it's like dojo-type fighting. It's like 1v1 type thing.
Mm.
It's very computer gamey in that it's like you fight a series of fights and then the boss one, something maybe a bit crazy happens where there are three or four people, but the rules are quite, you think of like Smash Bros. Classic mode. It's like this versus this, and then it gets like crazier towards the end. So I don't know, to be honest, it seems very video gamey in that this is round one. This is the stipulation.
Yeah.
This is round two.
I guess at that point, I've forgotten her name, the girl.
Ramona,
Knives.
Roxy.
She's got like that kind of metal whip thing.
Yeah.
So she's got a weapon. Scott kind of doesn't have a weapon. But then, yeah, Ramona, you're just like, oh, you've just been hanging around, like, you've just been had that massive Thor in your handbag this whole time. Did I just say massive Thor?
Thor? You mean?
Because
like
I was thinking of Thor's hammer. Massive hammer in a bag the whole time. I'm like, couldn't you have chipped in with Patel? You could have just, like, chucked that hammer at him.
Yeah, but I think... I mean, I don't know. I feel like the fights are probably a metaphor for something. And in this world, I think everyone's kind of got their own fighting abilities.
Mm.
Right, like, Knives is suddenly a fighter. Like, she's got actual physical knives. Why didn't Knives help? You could say that about all of them.
Well, it's got nothing to do with Knives. This whole X's thing. To do with Ramona and
Scott.
Yeah,
but all the way through it, she's on Scott's side anyway, so she's trying to help Scott fight off everybody.
Mm. Well, she's probably not trying to help him fight off his new girlfriend's evil exes.
Yeah.
Well, she's trying to get Ramona at the end.
I feel like everyone has got fighting abilities, but this is Scott's fight kind of thing.
Yeah.
Except this one time where he doesn't
want
to.
Not convinced.
Okay.
Not convinced.
Keep going.
I think that was it.
Yeah, we're on to trivia now, or themes. Go to themes.
Oh, I don't think I wrote anything for themes.
Did you write anything for anything else?
I've got some trivia. I can't use your... Oh, themes. I have written some themes.
Go on. Go
video games.
Yeah, that's the theme, definitely.
Yep. Different battle styles. So you've got, like you say, kind of martial arts fighting, and then there's fighting with weapons. There's when it's against the twins, those evil exes, it's kind of a music battle, but then they kind of have these sort of...
Well, it's Battle of the Bands.
Battle of the Bands, but then it kind of... They have, like, this dragon thing.
It's very, like, Godzilla versus Monster
yeah,
type.
And it's
yeah.
kind of these... I don't know, these
it's
things
a bit like
fighting.
Spirits, aren't they?
Yeah. And I'd explain it. And there's a bit in the last fight with sword fighting, this, like, particular camera angle that came from above that I really liked, and you just see him, like, swooshing around. I just thought it was cool.
And they're all turning into money.
Yeah. It's just really cool. I've written about comic in live action, which we've already said. I've written, got to love / respect yourself.
Yeah.
Because if you don't love yourself, no one else is going to love you. You've got to learn to love yourself, and it can be hard, but it's something we all have to do.
Maybe you should.
Because you are worth it.
Love yourself.
Yeah. And then I've written about Nega Scott. Because at the end, he faces Nega Scott, which is like supposed to be his dark alter ego. And then you think there's going to be this big battle, and then he just like chats to him, and they're like, oh, we'll meet up next week. And it's just very silly, because then what? There's just this like dark, ghostly version of Scott walking around Toronto forever.
Yeah.
It's very silly. But yeah, you sometimes got to face your past, your dark parts, in order to improve. You got to work on that negative stuff. Love yourself, respect yourself, be nice to people. Those are my themes.
Okay, and then we're going to go on to the trivia, which you have prepared on your phone.
Trivia's on my phone, and I am not the laptop.
Speaking so that you can...
Got it.
Okay, go.
I've picked mainly game-themed ones, so hopefully you won't know them already. So MV Adams' band is called The Clash at Demon Head, mm-hmm. which I have to say, the song they sing in the surprise gig, I really like that song.
Mm-hmm.
I really like it. Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
Yeah.
It's named, the band, after... a lesser-known Nintendo Entertainment System game, Clash at Demon Head.
Yep.
How did you know that?
I knew that one.
It was released in the US in 1990. Ramona's hair colours, so it actually goes from pink, from blue to green, correspond with the colours of the three goddesses from the Hyrule Fantasy.
Okay. That's
so
cool.
Pink is Din, blue is Nehru, and green is Faro.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Little Zelda reference. Thought you'd enjoy that. And then the Chaos Theatre is the music venue that Gideon has built. Yep. And that is a reference to a location in the Super Nintendo game Earthbound.
Oh, I feel like I should know that.
In the game, a band... Again, I'm just reading these. I got them from IMDb. In the game, a band called the Runaway Five perform their nightly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess I never put them together.
Uh-huh.
That was cool.
Hitting you with some knowledge.
There's I don't know if you came across it, but there's really the coolest kind of longer trivia is the way that the numbers come through into the parts of the film. So there's a load of emphasis around the number one when he's gonna fight his first guy, the first evil ex,
mm-hmm.
and then the same throughout. But it's like really small things, like when Lucas Lee, you know, when he picks up it's like the commercial, and it's like. The next thing you're going to hear is his phone going down and me pressing the trigger. Like on his neck, he's got like a number two tattoo and stuff. Mm. Like Todd, like in the band, there's three of them on stage. They're a three-piece kind of thing. Number like one is like Matthew Patel. You can only see one of his eyes.
Mm.
And Wallace is like, look, it's that one guy kind of thing. And there's like loads of it.
It's very rewatchable because there is a lot of detail and things. Like I've only just understood that thing with Ramona going through like bloody portals. I've only just understood that, and I've seen this film like 8 times.
What do you think was going on?
I don't know. Everyone's going to be laughing at me now. I don't know.
I don't think so. He might have cleared some things up. Yeah. Also, did you notice all the X's throughout
yes.
the film? Yeah. Like when
yes.
they're walking,
and he has like an X-Men patch on his coat.
Yeah.
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 I noticed some things, but yeah, there's a lot of little just nuggets in there. that you can go back and watch.
Like, a lot of care and love gone into this film, but it also seems like quite a, like probably feel like I didn't have that much time to do the film. Like, it just feels like a film in between Edgar Wright's films. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
I think.
I haven't read about much about the making of it. I know technically it like bombed.
Yeah.
It didn't make a lot of money. So it was seen as like a failure. But then I feel like now a lot of people you speak to, it's got quite good ratings. A lot of people like it. It's got, I don't know if you call it like cult status, but it's certainly something I enjoy rewatching quite a lot.
Yeah.
I really laughed the other night. I think Chris Evans and Brie Larson are like hilarious. Also for like the vegan powers and the vegan police for Todd. Really funny. He's like, bacon isn't vegan? Or like chicken or whatever. Yeah. No, gelato, sorry.
I've come to accept that most things, when they kind of hit that sweet spot of everything that I like, they usually aren't that popular. Like, there's a lot of artists that do a certain, like, they'll do, I don't know, a style of music and then get dropped by their record label because that music wasn't popular. Yeah, that album might be, like, one of my favourites of all time kind of thing. And then they'll, you know, they never do that again because people didn't like it. I just come to expect that.
Okay.
I'm not in the general market.
Well, I was going to say it's got a lot of, like, narrow, sort of, not narrow, but, like, references that you might miss and might not appeal to a lot of people, but a lot of people like love Zelda and they'll enjoy all those references. I think there is a lot in there. I think there's like references to like Seinfeld, you know, when they have like the canned laughter and stuff. Yeah. I think that's featured, that's from Seinfeld, which I only found out reading because I've never watched Seinfeld. So I think there's a lot in there. I think people, yeah, like my mum, she's not going to know that when young Neil's playing Zelda, but she's not really good.
No,
I think maybe she does know what Zelda is now. But when it plays
the,
and when it plays, yeah, exactly. Well, the same with me. Like, I probably wouldn't have known. So all them little bits of music, she's not going to be like, oh yes, that is from The Legend of Zelda. And a lot of people won't, but a lot of people will.
Yeah, but they're not always the type of people who go out to go see films at opening weekend box office. That's the problem.
It's true.
Have you got a conclusion?
I would just say a bit that really made me laugh is when Knives or Ramona asks young Neil, what do you play? And they mean like an instrument, and he's just like, whoa.
It's kind of a big question.
It's a big question. And I'm like, that's just you. That makes me laugh. Like, what do you play? Well, what don't I play?
Well, I do play instruments, so joke's on you.
I know. You could answer that question in so many ways.
End of discussion?
Yeah. So, in conclusion, I'd say it's a really fun film, lots of laughs, really cool stylistically. Maybe my problem would be is that as a concept, you kind of just have to go with it because it kind of doesn't make sense. But if you're just in that world and kind of just accept that it's a comic book come to life, then I think you can go with it, but it might just confuse some people. But I think it's very inventive and well done.
Great. That's the end of Scott Pilgrim. Yay. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Good Vibes Film Club. Do you have anything to say?
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you very
for
much.
Sticking with us.
I'm glad you liked it.
We do this on our Monday nights, half asleep.
So as always, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/goodvibesfilmclub, and you can access our bonus content for $1. You can also follow me on Twitter at Cosmic Onion, and you can send us any questions or feedback or just mail at fanmail@goodvibesfilmclub.com. And don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes and tell your friends. Tell everyone that you know. And the most important part, we're going to tell you which films we do next week. And they are, do you remember?
Do I remember? So my pick, or like the one off my favourite list, is Your Name, which is a Japanese animated film.
And
I picked off your list, A Star Wars Story, Rogue One. That is what I picked. Because I just fancy watching.
You did indeed. We look forward to hearing from you next time. Until then. watch some films.
Thank you. Bye.